Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Yes, a new person on the co-hosting team. Cindy, welcome.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So Cindy joining us. And of course, then the first thing is, who is Cindy and what does she do? So you've been known to do a little needlework. What is it, primarily a needlepoint, charted canvas? What is your real interest?
So primarily charted canvas, needlepoint. I do cross stitch. I dabble in lots of other types of needlework, but mostly I do counted canvas.
Has that always been the case?
Oh, gosh, no. I started out doing surface embroidery on pillowcases and dresser scarves when I was a kid.
There we go. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yep. And then I did crewel, although it was really just long and short stitching, you know, not the full range of crewel stitches. I did that for a long time through college and as an adult, and then my mom taught me how to do cross stitch, and that's when I dropped the surface stitching.
Now see, that's interesting to me because most people would go from cross stitch to a surface embroidery, so you preferred then to make the X's.
Yeah, I still do some surface embroidery from time to time, but I don't do enough of it to be very good at it, and so I don't, you know, do anything that's real complicated.
Yeah.
And I guess I have kind of a geometric bent. I kind of like I guess that's kind of what draws me to the counted needlepoint.
Yeah.
I like the geometric patterns.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be said to that. I think that's what attracts me to it too. I love the symmetry, the order to it. Yeah, I connect with that. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Right. And when I started doing cross stitch, would have been in the late 70s. I don't think a lot of people were doing counted needlepoint at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of it that my mom did, but I think I just don't think there was a whole lot of it way back then. Gene Hilton, of course.
Yeah.
Was, and Marnie Ritter. I don't know if you've heard.
Oh yeah. Marnie. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. She did some counted needlework back then probably, but there just wasn't as many designers as there is today.
Yeah.
So at least not that I was aware of. Maybe there probably was, and I just didn't know it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing, because I started in college, which would have been mid-70s,
mm-hmm.
and a girlfriend at the time, she and her friend did needlepoint, and I wanted to do it. They were doing a painted canvas,
mm-hmm.
and so that's where I got interested, and it was, you know, show me this, how do you do it, and then we were actually just drawing simple designs and stitching those just to try to do different stitches, but it was really painted canvas. And then it was later on that I discovered the others, but it was hard because if your local shop, you know, whatever they carried is what you knew about. I mean, there really wasn't a good way to learn about all these other techniques because we didn't have the internet. Mm-hmm. So,
well, not only that, but what they carried, but also what they had models for.
Oh, yes.
I can't tell you how many patterns I bought because I saw a model stitched.
Yeah. Yep.
Where I, looking at the pattern itself, didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
But when I saw it stitched, then, I want that one.
Yep. Exactly. Well, that's just it. Because that's, you know, at that time, because it was, for me, it was a painted canvas shop. Stuff was incredibly expensive for someone who's going to college. And you couldn't, and it was all wool. And, mm-hmm. I think mainly did most of mine on 13 point canvas, mm-hmm. you know, because that's what it was. But I really got my eyes opened when I moved after I graduated and moved to Illinois to, oh no, it just slipped my mind. It was a big box catalog store. I hate it.
Oh.
No, not, it'll come to me after we're done. What was that? But anyway, so they had a store near me, and it was mainly catalog stuff. You know, you order through a catalog and mail order. What was the name of that place? Anyway, so they had a store, and it was basically a big box store of needlework, but it was all kits. And right. So that's when I got to see this cross stitch and stamped cross stitch and all the dimensions kits, all of those things. And but then also at that time, cross stitch stores were popping up like weeds. So
right.
Yeah. So that's where I run into it. And then you just go from there. But it's so weird because we just accept the fact that you can just go online and look for anything now. And when you think back about just really how limited our exposure was, I didn't know about any clubs or anything, like A&G groups or anything like that. I didn't know if that even existed. I'm sure it did.
Yeah, it did. In fact, my mother was a member of the Embroiderers Guild for I don't know how long. She's the one that got me to join. She and my sister wanted to go to the national seminar in Louisville, and it was either 87 or 88. Uh-huh. And they decided I had to go along with them. So that's when I joined.
Oh.
So my first experience was with a national seminar.
Oh, look at you, right out of the gate.
Yeah. Jumped right into classes that I had no idea what I was doing. My mother was trying to teach me needlepoint on the way down there because I'd signed up for a needlepoint class.
Uh-huh.
We drove.
Yeah. So you had a influence then. You had a gateway to that, which, I did not have that. Yeah.
Yeah. She's the one that switched me to cross stitch. She never liked the crewel embroidery.
Uh huh.
And so I was home visiting for Christmas one year, and she said, "I'll teach you how to do cross stitch." So she let me go through her patterns, and I probably picked the worst thing I could have picked from the point of view of how easy it was to stitch. A Morel mushroom with all of those different shades of creams and browns. So, I was changing the thread color every two or three stitches. And jump in feet first.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, it's just interesting how far, and now today you just, we just accept anything's available anywhere. Just go online, get it. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's still hard for people to find groups, and maybe some of it is that people don't want to join a big group, but I see a lot people ask on Facebook, about stitching groups and, so I do my part for EGA and ANG when mm-hmm. I have the opportunity. But I have to say that, EGA is where I learned to do all of the different kinds of techniques that I do these days. Mm-hmm. And I learned that there are some that I didn't like to do. and that's, that's fine. You don't have to like everything. But,
right.
The little projects that you get to do in a guild meeting give you a little bit of a taste of what the technique is like and whether or not you think you'd like to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's obviously one of the real benefits of guilds. All right. Well, that's, so we're going to see from you then, charted canvas mostly, but then you even do some painted work then.
Yeah. I love the painted canvases. They're beautiful. But they're expensive. And so I don't buy very many of them, but I have a fair collection of them, and some of them I've started, some of them I just look at.
are you one of those that buys them and I'll get to them one day?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I learned a new acronym. It's NESTY, NESTY.
Okay, what is that?
Okay, hang on just a second. It just went out of my head. And I found it on a beading website, because I dabble in beading too. It's not even started yet. So N, not even E, started ST, yet Y, nesty, not even started yet.
Okay.
So that's all of the cross stitch patterns and painted canvases and counted needlepoint. That's my collection.
Okay, so that's in the spreadsheet. That's what it goes under, and nesty, not even started. Yeah. Okay, all right. Because I've got a long list for that particular column. So, yeah, all right. Yeah.
Our ANG chapter is going to start working on PhDs. You heard that one?
No, I don't know that one either.
Projects half done.
Oh, I have those too. Yes. Excellent. Not
what a UFO is.
Not started yet, and projects
not
half done.
Yet.
Not even. Yeah, okay. Pretty soon we'll be like NASA here. We'll have all kinds of acronyms here. Not even started yet. And
PhD.
Projects half done. All right.
And unfinished objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that one. I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, those are good. Those are good. Yeah, we'll take those. All right. Add to the list.
Right.
Yep.
So that's the spreadsheet. Yeah, that has everything in it. And in fact, that's one of the suggestions that the woman who wrote the beading blog suggested for your projects. You know, first get everything out and go through it and sort it out into you know, stuff that you are, get out the stuff that you don't like anymore that you're never going to do and just get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
And then what's left, you kind of sort and organize and prioritize.
Yeah, that first step, though, is the tough one.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because you were in love with it at one point.
And then you look at it now and you think, what was I thinking when I picked those colors?
Yeah. Who said that was a good design? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yep. Okay, all right. Well, I got a couple of new things here I've learned. All right. Good to have you along, then. That's great.
Thanks.
Okay, so now you're president of Cyber Stitchers.
Cyber Pointers.
Cyber Pointers, jeez. Cyber Pointers. So we got to get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to get the things coming up this week now. So tonight now, Cindy Gershon joins us. And if you'll recall, Cindy, the podcast this past Sunday was with Cindy. She's a judge. She's a needlework judge. And so we talked about what judges do and see and how it all works on Sunday. And then tonight on the Stitch Hour, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on the YouTube channel, then Cindy will join us. And she has a bunch of photos for us to look at. And then she'll talk about more about what judges look for and what's good, what's bad, so on and so forth. And then, of course, the other component is anybody who's in the audience will answer questions. Beth will be with us to monitor the questions. So show up with your questions and ask a experienced judge what she looks for and what's good and when things go awry. And it's a good way to learn. So that's tonight at 8 o'clock. That's going to be really looking forward to that.
And, me too.
So listen to the podcast. That'll give you the groundwork. And then Wednesday night, show up with your questions. And then now Friday, Friday, July 30 is World Embroidery Day. And so from 2 to 5 Eastern time, so 3 hours, we're just going to have stitch and chat time. And so Beth and Jennifer and I will be there we're just going to be on live to stitch and chat. And then each hour we have a guest. So from 2 o'clock, Natalie Dupuis will be with us. So it'll be some gold work, some embroidery, so on and so forth. Then at 3 o'clock, Kathy Andrews from The Unbroken Thread. And look that one up if you want to be impressed. So Kathy will be with us from 3 to 4 o'clock. And a lot of embroidery there. And then from 4 to 5, Barbara Hudson of the Queenstown Sampler Designs will be with us. And Barbara's been with us before on more than one occasion. Always a treat to talk with her. So we'll get to see some of her new reproduction sampler charts. And she has a new a new antique that she just bought that we'll be able to see for the first time. So all three designers, and we're just going to spend 3 hours on World Embroidery Day. We'll all have needlework going at once and just talk for 3 hours. It'll be fun. Yes. So join us for that. And then remember now, mark down that we will be at the EGA seminar in September. September 1st, we'll be at the EGA seminar doing live shows and interviews and videos. So all of you who would like to see what a seminar is about, we're going to do our best job, or make our best effort to show you and expose you to what one of these big annual seminars is like, and give you a little experience with them. So that's going to be fun. We have the usual things still going on: the Marian Lang chart, the Amanda Rowe, Mary Jane Fry, the Botany Bay sampler. All those at Sassy Jack's. Spring Hill Stitch Along is at Needle in a Haystack, and that's the Spring Hill. Now, the Summer Hill one just came out, and Kathy is putting together a couple of kits for that. So Spring Hill is wetalkfiber.com/springhill, and then wetalkfiber.com/summerhill will connect you with Needle in a Haystack, and you'll be able to get kits for that, and that Summer Hill one is really a treat. So watch for that. Give us another week or so before you start trying that wetalkfiber.com/summerhill. Another week or so just for Kathy to get things organized and make sure that she has the threads and the linen in place so that when you order. But and we'll announce it when it's available. But Spring Hill and Summer Hill now will both be available from Needle in a Haystack, which is great. And then also the Botany Bay. Now, you can get the Botany Bay kits from Kim at Sassy Jack's. You can also get those from The Attic, from Gene Lee at The Attic, because that was their sampler of the month in May? I think May. Doesn't matter. Anyway, they'll have the kits. And then be sure and check out Take Wing, the sampler from Joanna Kabanoff, also at Sassy Jack's. And then Sunday, this is, wow, this was so much fun. Virginia Postrell is our guest Sunday. And she's written five books, but her newest book, The Fabric of Civilization, How Textiles Made the World. And when you hear that title and that tagline, The Fabric of Civilization, How Textiles Made the World, my first reaction was, okay, this is going to be pretty propped up. Because, you know, textiles, how they made the world, that's stretching it a bit. Actually, it's quite the opposite. It's kind of mind-blowing, the importance of thread and textiles in, really in all aspects of life, but certainly in the business world and technology world. It really is, it's a book to read, definitely. And so we're going to talk to her, to Virginia, about the book and some of her research and so on and so forth. But you definitely want to read the book. It is kind of mind-blowing how important fabric and thread has been all the way back to cavemen and the role it's played just all the way through in all walks of life. So that was a really good one. So that's Sunday. There we have it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Busy.
We try to keep from getting bored. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we want to learn about Cyber Pointers. So you're president of Cyber Pointers. Now, this is a sidecar kind of thing to ANG. How does this fit into ANG?
This is ANG's online chapter.
Okay.
So I don't know how long it's been in existence. I've been a member for quite a while. And it's a very active group. We've got 500 plus members.
Oh,
I think it's the largest ANG chapter. Don't quote me on that, but I think it is. Most of them are from the U.S., but we have members from other countries, Canada and other countries around the world. And we do a meeting every other month, starting in January. So we just had a meeting in July. The meetings are 5 days 5 consecutive days, the first weekend basically of the month. And it's all online through groups.io.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a program for the meeting. So we have some kind of a project, and you sign up for the project in advance, and sometimes there's a kit and sometimes you do your own thing, the threads.
Yeah.
But you usually always have that choice of doing your own thing for the threads and the canvas. And then the teacher sends, you know, the instructions like they normally do, but then each day they publish some additional instructions, just like you would have if you were in a face-to-face class.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also do workshops with national teachers. And
well, let me back up. So this meeting is 5 days, but the 5 days is focused on the project, or is there also business and other things going on?
Oh, there's business and other things going on. Everybody that's on the board files some kind of a report, you know, to update the membership on where we are, you know, with the treasury and,
yeah,
and you know, membership and all of that other kind of stuff. So, and there's, you know, it's a standard kind of business meeting. You know, everybody reads the minutes from the last meeting, and we vote, you know, to approve them, or, you know, however, usually.
Yeah.
That, yeah. So yeah, there, that's that business kind of goes on, and it's, again, it's all by email, and it sometimes kind of seems like you're getting all kinds of stuff fired at you. Although you can adjust how you get your emails. You can get a digest if you want, or you can get every single one all, you know, as they come through.
Yeah.
So groups.io lets you do that, so you're not overwhelmed.
Okay. Cause 5 days just seemed rather ominous to me. So I started to wonder, am I sitting there for 7, 8 hours, 5 days, or am I popping in and out? How do I participate?
Pop in and out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And what I learned, so one thing that we do is we have a door prize for every meeting, and it's based on, so there's a poll that goes out for each day, and you click on the poll whether you're going to attend the meeting. And every time you do that, you're entered in that door prize drawing.
Oh, okay.
So you clock in every day for the 5 days, you know, you're in there for 5 times. And the door prize is a membership for the next year.
Oh, well, that's significant right there. That'll make you show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't know that until I became president, because I'd only been checking in once during the 5 days.
Oh.
And, you know, in the past. So yeah, I've learned all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, sign up to be president. That'll happen. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I've been president of our EGA chapter, and I was the first president of our and a founding member of our Iowa chapter of ANG. You know, we're talking about 25 people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for EGA, we've got 16 in ANG chapters. So, you know, small groups are a whole different thing from a big group.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But it's interesting, and it's been kind of fun. It's a 2-year term, and I just started in March. So that'll probably be just about the time that I get good at it.
Yeah. 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 That's usually how it happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get to repeat, or is it 2 years and you're out?
I think you can do 2 terms.
Okay. Yeah. By then you've had enough, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah.
No,
you know,
no,
how hard it is to get volunteers though.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, that's the bane of every group's existence, is how, you know, how many volunteers can you get and how long can they hang in there?
I don't know if people just don't want to, I don't know why people don't want to volunteer, but I guess I'm one of those that is willing to volunteer. So I have been, you know, I've been on program committees and,
yeah,
all the officers and all that other kind of stuff. And I think it adds value to my experience of the group.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, if you ever figure out how to get the 80% of members who don't volunteer to actually volunteer, you'll change the world.
The only thing that I've ever found that really works fairly well is to ask a person directly. If you just ask the group for volunteers, nobody raises their hand.
No.
But often if you go directly to a person and say, will you do this? A lot of times they'll do it.
Yeah, there is something about that. If you're in a group, you can just hide and do nothing. But also, if you're asked, then you know that's an indication you're wanted. You know, we value
True.
You, and so yeah, that'll get them in. So then, all right. Other than the 5-day meetings, then what else am I doing as a member?
Okay, so we also do workshops with national instructors, correspondence courses. So if people go to cyberpointers.org and go to the education page, you can see what our meeting programs are for 2021 and 2022. And then the 2021 and 2022 workshops are there, and the 2021 correspondence courses. Now, a lot of these, the registration is closed. And that tells you whether it's open or closed. We generally have people register fairly far ahead of when the class is going to run. And that has helped a lot with the whole supply chain issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, you almost don't have a choice anymore because if you're going to have materials to start,
Right. But the if people go and look at the 2020 workshops, the registration for the first one is going to open in August. It's Starry, Starry Nights at Tony Gerda's kimono.
Yep.
Click on that from the education page. You go to the page for the project, and then you can click on the photo and see a larger version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you get to look at, that's that whole I saw a model stitched kind of a
right.
thing.
Yep. Yep.
And I can tell you that I signed up for more than one of these after I looked at the larger picture.
Yep.
So lots of opportunities for learning. And the teachers, whether it's for the meeting programs or workshops or correspondence courses, are available through groups.io to answer questions. And so everybody gets to see that, everybody can look at the messages. There's a different page set up for each project, and you can go and put photos. The teacher usually puts some photos there, and then people who are stitching the projects will put, sometimes they'll put in process photos in and then a final photo when the project is completed. So you can see what kinds of things people have done. Get to see lots of different colorways that way. It's really interesting to see how people interpret these different projects.
Yeah. That's what I enjoy about, Needlepoint Nation is seeing what people, the different ways people see any project is.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. Because you see the original and you go, well, I like that. That's pretty nice. And then five other people come along and holy smokes, how'd you get that? I'm going with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like those colors. I want to use those.
Yeah, exactly. So Cyber Pointers really is an excellent way if you don't have a local chapter or if monthly meetings and local chapter activities just don't suit your lifestyle. This is a way to get involved with an organization and ANG and get the benefit of the projects and the national teachers and everything else.
Yes, and you do have to be an ANG member to be a Cyber Pointers member.
So it's the $52 for ANG membership per year, and then what additional for Cyber Pointers?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was
Oops.
Afraid you didn't ask me that. Let me see if I can tell you here real quick.
Not too much more, I'm guessing.
I think it's $18.
Oh, okay. All right. So
12.
Yeah. So 70 12. Bucks, which is, you say, oh, 70 bucks. But if you're a member of a local chapter, that's usually 25, 30, 35 bucks somewhere in there on top of your ANG membership. So, it's well within the ball game. Yeah.
Right. And the chapter does support some of the teacher fees. So everything isn't passed on directly to the the members who are taking a class.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that saves you, I mean, it really gives you an opportunity to take advantage of some of these national teachers without spending as much money as you would if they came to your location. We were trying to set something up for our Iowa chapter of ANG, and boy, it was just so prohibitively expensive by the time you pay for the teacher fee and the travel expenses and, you know, all of that other kind of stuff. And then the kit on top of that, you know, a small chapter just can't support that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the ongoing issue. And I think now with this pandemic and our new knowledge of Zoom, that we'll have more teachers offering online courses. So that should open some doors for smaller groups, I hope.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's there's a real plus there, I think. So, well, that's so all right. So that's a good setup. Now that raises the question for me then. Obviously, if you don't have meetings and that you have to travel to and so on and so forth, then this opens doors for people who just have not been able to participate otherwise, don't have a chapter nearby, but also suggests to me that makes it easier for younger people who have kids to be part of a group. Have you seen that happening? Have you seen the membership shifting?
You know, I don't have any way to know.
Okay.
So we don't have that kind of information. We don't collect that kind of information. Yeah. And we don't meet face-to-face.
Yes, that's right. So how are you going to know? Right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know. I can tell you in our Iowa chapter, we don't have younger members and we're struggling with ways to, you know, try to reach out to people and, you know, tell people that we're here, first of all, and then to get them interested in doing the work and joining us.
Yeah.
So I'm, right. I'm currently vice president for membership for that chapter. So if you got any great ideas for membership, let me know.
Well, that's a tough nut because, first you get them involved, or at least awareness is item one, and that takes marketing and that takes time and money. And, then how do you reach out to the young people? Because they're there. We see them online all over the place. They're there. It's just a matter of connecting with them. Yeah.
Well, and those are some of the places that I, you know, try to get a word in edgewise about EGA and ANG whenever I have the opportunity.
Yeah.
At least, you know, guiding people to the websites. You know, maybe the membership is beyond them right at this point. But as you've said many times, there's a wealth of information available for free on both of these websites.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's no reason that people shouldn't be learning about them along with the other things that they learn about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true. And that's, you find that an awful lot, that if you go to really any group's website and poke around a little bit, the amount of free information, free projects, mm-hmm. is really huge. It's really just huge. In terms of, so it's, you don't have to spend any money, but then obviously as you benefit from that, you start to realize that there's a greater potential in membership in terms of what you can get out of an organization. So, you know, hopefully you'll join, but
right.
if you know, people are always saying, where can I find a free project? I just want to try something. Holy smokes. Mm-hmm. Just, go to EGA, go to ANG. I assume Cider Pointer has, you know, free projects. Just about every designer puts up something that you can, and you can usually stitch those out of your stash and get some exposure to a technique. I mean, it's there without spending a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we have anything on Cider Pointers, but, ANG did those, what did they call it? Hum projects or something like that last year. Several designers designed small projects for people to do while we were all stuck at home.
Mm-hmm.
Pulp minis is what they called it. HUM. Here's another acronym for you. Hold up minis. And that's on the ANG website. And those are small projects by a wide range of designers, you know, that easily stitch out of your stash and, you know, get a good introduction to the kinds of things that we do.
Yeah, and that's just it. And use up some of that stash because it's just going to sit there and collect dust. So put it to use. Right. And now it's H-O-M. Say that again.
H-U-M.
U-M.
Hold Up Minis. I'll send you the link.
Hold Up Minis. Okay. All right. Yep. Okay. So, but yeah, especially younger people, if you want to try something, a lot of these projects are small. Go poke around. You'll find them. They're free. Mm-hmm. Yep. Grab some thread out of your box and go get it. Yep.
And then, you know, ANG has a Stitch of the Month project. They've done this for years and years and years.
Yes.
And they're behind the paywall now, but they have one from the past that is available to anybody. And I forget which year is available now. It's 1998 or something like that. I looked at it the other day. And so there are 12, whoever the designer was, you know, did 12 monthly parts of the overall chart, and you can download those all now. So every year they change, I think they change to a different year on the ANG website, to a different Stitch of the Month project, and that's available to anybody for free.
Yeah. Yeah, I was disappointed when they put that behind the paywall, because I always felt like that was a good way to get people exposed to ANG and get them involved in something, kind of a gateway drug to me. And I was disappointed when they took that away from just free access, because it seemed like that was, I did one year, and really it's one of my favorite pieces, framed and hanging on a wall. And, it was very effective at exposing me to a bunch of stitches. And then I ended up with a piece I'm pretty proud of. And, so it's too bad, but, those things have to happen sometimes. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But at least they still have at least one available. So,
right. Yeah. Place to start. Yep.
Right.
Now the photo, you sent me some photos to go with this show.
Yeah.
And these are ones you're going to enter in the fair.
Right. The Iowa State Fair.
Uh huh. You do this as a regular thing?
Yeah. So I came to Iowa in 1981, in August of 1981, for a job. And the one of the first things my coworkers did was take me to the state fair. I'd never been to a state fair before and didn't really know what to expect. But, you know, the animals are cool and all of that. But they had a fabric and thread section, and the quilts and the embroidery and, you know, yarn, knitting and crocheting, and was just, you know, amazing. They didn't have a very good place to display all of that stuff way back then.
Uh-huh.
But it was under the grandstands, basically.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, you know, no air conditioning, and
yeah,
the quilts were under plastic to keep them clean. That was how they did it for many years. But I was amazed at the variety of stitching that I saw. And so I think I entered my first thing, I don't know if it was 82 or 83, but it was within a fairly short period of time. It was actually that Morel mushroom that my mom started me on. I finally managed to get it finished, and I won a blue ribbon on it.
There we go.
My very first cross stitch piece ever. So that was kind of encouragement. And I think I've only missed 3 years since then.
Oh, that's impressive.
In the fair. So sometimes I only had one piece, but I've gotten everything from no ribbons to best of shows ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
But my motivation for entering the fair has never been ribbons. I guess I'm not that competitive. I saw it as a way to show people what I was doing, to share with people what I was doing, really about the only way that I was aware of at that time, because that was before I joined any guild.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I enjoyed exhibiting my work through that venue and seeing what other people were doing too.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you
go ahead.
is the judging, has it been good for you in terms of improving your needlework?
So it's been up and down.
Okay.
And
okay.
So they don't always have a certified judge, and they don't tell us who the judge is because there's only one judge for needlework.
Oh, okay.
And I guess they used to in the past, you know, publish the judge's name, and then people would, you know, even this was before social media, you know, but people would get upset and unhappy with the judge and complain and all that kind of stuff. So now the judge is secret, which is fine. And, you know, some years there's really not much of a comment at all. Sometimes there's a comment I don't really agree with. You know, the judge didn't like the colors. Well, you know, what can I do about that? I like the colors.
Yeah, it's my project.
Yeah, right. I do appreciate, like Cindy was saying, you know, that it's great when, you know, they give you some kind of a compliment and then a critique, you know, if there is one to be made. And so, you know, some of the things that she mentioned, watching the direction of stitches, I got second or third place on a piece that had road stitches, a small road stitch in each of the four corners.
Uh-huh.
Three of them went the same way. The fourth one went the other direction on the top. So, you know, I hadn't noticed it. I didn't check my piece carefully before I took it to the framer or after, like she suggested.
Right.
And it's still that way to this day, because I wasn't going to take it apart.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's some of the things that one thing she did not mention when you're checking things is, and I know you talked about what the back of your work looks like. I had a framer frame a piece backwards.
Oh, that's a tip of the cap to you right there.
Yeah. So I, you know, when I picked it up, I looked at it and said, that looks really nice, except it's backwards. And he was kind of embarrassed about it, but yeah.
Now, my statement would be, that looks really nice, and I'm proud to say that that's the back side. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, but if you'd flip it over, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't do hardanger, but one of our members does really beautiful hardanger, and she regularly took blue ribbons at the fair, but she'd often have to go and tell them to flip her piece over because it's wrong side up.
That's all right. No, that's all right. I'd be happy to give somebody that advice. Yeah. Yeah. Turn that over. So then your local group, then you guys, it sounds like you, several of you contribute every year to the fair then.
Yeah. There's a EGA chapter in Cedar Rapids that has a lot of members who submit entries. Our chapter in Iowa City closed down quite some time ago, and some of us joined the Cedar Rapids chapter. And a lot of them have been entering for quite some time. I think we kind of carry the needlepoint division.
Yeah. Okay.
Seem to be the main ones that are doing it in Iowa.
Yeah.
I know there's some people over in, Mississippi River Valley chapter in Davenport and Moline, you know, right there on mm-hmm. the river.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's farther for them to go. I don't see a lot of them entering in the fair.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't any needlework shops in Des Moines anymore. So, you know, people, again, that's the other way that you learn about this stuff. If you have a needlework shop that you can go to and see these things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There aren't any in Des Moines. So unfortunately, the entries in needlework have been falling over the last several years, and they've actually reduced the number of classes that are available for entering just because their entries are falling.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah, it is.
It's hard to keep that stuff up, you know, and of course this, I mean, this is the time of year for state fairs all across the country, and yeah, it's just hard. That's hard to keep that kind of thing going, and people get old and leave us, and you know, that's
right.
They're not always replaced by a younger person, and yeah.
Right.
It's unfortunate.
And too, you know, over the years, quilting has stayed, I think, pretty steady. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a quilt shop in every other little town in Iowa, probably Illinois too, and Missouri too.
Oh, they're everywhere. Yeah.
And the yarn crafts have stayed, you know, people knit and crochet. Clothing has gone up and down. But, you know, I think lately, the last several years, it seems like people are more interested in doing things that have some kind of use, you know, that it's not just something that you stitch and hang on the wall.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon, because quilting and knitting, crochet, knit, whatever. And I know they're different. I know they're distinctly different.
I know.
But
I don't do them, so I lump them together too.
Yeah. But those two, boy, they are just rock solid, up and down for everything else. And it must be just that. The end product is something you can use, or you can at least make it so you can use it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those interest me, but yeah. And the quilting is a fascinating thing for me, because you know, its origins are literally that. Let's keep fabrics alive that would go in the trash, mm-hmm. and make another use out of them. And any more today, boy, the art quilt world is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It is just truly amazing.
Yeah. And you wonder, where do they display all these? You know, in your house, where do you hang up all these quilts? But
well, they don't.
No, okay. Because you only got so much wall space, and a quilt can suck up a lot of it. But
right. Well, and I think that's why a lot of people do the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that are about the same size as a framed needlework piece, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, you know, you only have so much wall space. I have lots of things that are not hanging because I don't have enough wall space.
Yep.
And for a long time, I had them hanging in my office at work until I retired, and then I brought them all back home. So now they're all.
Now it's even worse.
And now it's even worse.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, I think, probably have enough that they could have an exhibition each month in their house. And, yeah. Invite the neighbors over for tea and an exhibition. Yeah. All right. I think we're going to call it there.
Hey. Okay.
Well, good to have you along. And first time out of the gate. That was fun. Yay.
That's fun. I enjoyed it.
Yep. So tonight now, join us 8 o'clock. Cindy Gershon, bring your questions about what judges look for, how you can improve your needlework, improve your stitching. And then Friday at 2 o'clock Eastern time on the YouTube channel, join us for some or all of the 3 hours. We'll have Natalie Dupuy, Kathy Andrews, and Barbara Hudson join us to talk about what they're doing and just talk about stitching in general. So get your favorite beverage and your current project, or haul out one that is kind of dusty, and spend the afternoon just talking with us and stitching. It'll be fun. World Embroidery Day. That's it. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Cindy.
Thanks, Gary.